Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So quick introduction, Louis Hall, founder of Cerillion back in 1999, in the heady days of dot-com booms and technological revolutions and all the rest of it. That was a MBO from a company called Logica, which some of you might remember. That was a large UK software house. And essentially we bought the part of Logica that I ran at the time, which was the customer care and billing division, a part of telecoms. Oliver Gilchrist joins us in 2001 with a glowing track record of PwC and technology startups and so on. So what does Cerillion do? Very simply, we build CRM and billing systems for global telcos. So we say systems are mission critical because they're systems which our customers have to have. They can't do without these systems. They enable them to onboard customers, to monitor the customers' usage on their networks, connect those customers to networks, charge those customers for that usage, bill those customers, collect payments, cut them off when they don't pay, restore their services when they do pay, workflow, trouble ticketing, every sort of core enterprise function you could imagine a telco would have to do. These are also sticky relationships. It takes a long time to replace a CRM and billing system. Telcos don't enter that journey lightly. It's typically 3 years, a three-year journey, often longer, from deciding you're going to replace your billing system to actually having it done. And obviously huge reputational risk that you get it wrong and you send out bills that are wrong, and you've probably all seen stories in the press about those sorts of things happening. Never to us, I hasten to add. Customers are also very important to us because they generate a very large amount of our annual revenue. So 70% at least of our annual revenue is generated by our existing customer base. And that's important because although not all of that is purely recurring, it is semi-recurring in that customers will always just spend a certain amount of money, and that enables us to have a fairly smooth growth line. Moving on. So a little bit about our product strategy, what we actually do. So we essentially have a core business based on our enterprise software suite, and this is by and large the bulk of our business and our income. So that's the software I've just been talking about. But we recently developed a pure cloud native solution called Cerillion Skyline. And what that's attempting to do is to take a thin slice of the functionality in our enterprise platform and provide that across a vast range of verticals. So Skyline, the cloud solution, just does charging and billing. So a much smaller subset of functionality. But it does that for any kind of business. So we have customers in digital marketing, in publishing, in healthcare, and so on, who are using the cloud solution to bill those sorts of things. Whereas the enterprise product is a business transformation project, it's typically at least 9 months, sometimes 18 months, sometimes even as much as 2 years to implement. These are typically £3 to £5 million contracts just to start with for that implementation. The cloud solution is pure SaaS model, so it's pure software as a service. There's no upfront cost. It's a pay-as-you-grow model. We're talking about implementations in days or weeks, not months and years. So a very, very different model. I guess there's two main, there's a couple of main reasons why we've done Skyline and gone with the cloud solution. One is obviously we want to boost our pure recurring revenue. So for us, recurring revenue is very important. And of course, all of that revenue is recurring. But also, at some point in the future, although telcos are slow to adopt cloud for their core systems, because obviously telcos have concerns about data security, and if my customer data is in the cloud, is that really a good thing? Very conservative in that respect. But also telcos require their computer systems to be very closely integrated into their networks, because all of this stuff is happening in real time mostly. And that's harder to do if you're working with systems in the cloud. But even telcos, we think, will eventually move in this direction. So it's about making sure that we have a solution if they decide that enterprise is no longer key. Yes, please.
So if you've got a much sort of quicker take-up time, does that mean you've got a higher level of customer churn as well? People are moving on and off these things?
These are inevitably less sticky customers, correct. But it's one of those things, again, if the billing system's working, you just don't change it. So they're not as sticky, but so far, you know, we've not experienced much in the way of churn. Of course, the other reason for doing cloud is to diversify across these different verticals. And you know, we feel that helps to future-proof the business, because if telco slows down for whatever reason, then we've got customer bases in healthcare, huge growth market, for example. Fantastic. Okay. Very quick look at the product suite. I'm not going to go and explain these, so don't panic. I won't go through all of these boxes. But suffice to say, this is a large modular suite. We can deliver it pre-integrated with all these blue boxes out of the box. And we do that for lots of our customers. For some customers, we might only supply one or two of these boxes. And these are, they work with enterprise software, buses, and APIs, and so on. So these can be integrated into our customers' other systems very easily. So typically, network inventory, for example, which is a standalone module in its own right, we supply to some customers and nothing else, and so on. The only other point about this particular slide is that the big boxes at the back, the multicolored boxes, are the telecom industry's model of what you need to have in a billing and CRM system. And the blue boxes, as you can see, cover pretty much all of those areas. So the point is that we have a very broad footprint of functionality. So what's our strategy? Good question. So for us, it's all about taking what we have, which is a very solid enterprise software business, with an established customer base, and ramping that up. So how do we grow that faster? And obviously, the key to long-term shareholder value is faster growth, et cetera, et cetera. So on the enterprise side, we recently introduced what we call a convergent charging system. And this is a brand new real-time charging platform. And without getting into too much telco jargon, this enables us to bill any kind of telecoms event, whether it's TV, broadband, internet, mobile, fixed wire, whatever it is, in real time on the same platform. And in the telco world, that's a very important commodity. So being able to converge your services onto a single charging platform means you can do all kinds of clever things in cross-subsidizing between different services. Say, for example, Sky Television, Sky Broadband, Sky Mobile, and so on, those packages, all very simple to present on TV, but to actually engineer them in the background is very difficult, and that's where this platform comes in. So the CCS real-time charging platform has really been at the forefront of most of our wins in enterprise over the last couple of years, so particularly in mobile. So for mobile data, where all the growth is in telco revenues, that's a big part of the piece. On the right-hand side, we've spoken about Skyline, about the cloud solution. This is opening up new markets for us, not just in software as a service, but in other verticals. And of course, the third prong in terms of growth, if you like, is that we're also looking to grow inorganically through acquisition. And one of the main reasons we went to AIM 2 years ago was to have a platform that we could use to raise capital easily to go and buy other companies and expand in that direction. In terms of where we are geographically, we're headquartered in London. About half our staff are in Pune in India. That's an operation we started 10 years ago. These are all our own people. We built this from the ground up. And they do a lot of support, R&D, software development, that sort of thing. And we also have small offices in Sydney and Miami. So those are more regional sales, customer support functions, supporting Asia Pacific and the Americas, respectively. So a very quick look at why do telcos need to change their billing systems a bit? So the obvious question is, if it's hard to change these systems and high risk and nobody likes doing it, why would you bother? And of course, These are the reasons why you might want to do that. Telecoms has been an industry where telephone companies are driven by technology. So there's 3G, we need 3G. There's 4G, we need 4G. There's 5G. And often telcos will invest in these technologies and not really understand why, what the business model is in terms of how do I make any money out of that. So in order to make money out of those new technologies, one needs to create new services. And to do that, you need support systems like CRM and billing. So that's a key driver often in projects we win to replace billing systems. The old system isn't flexible enough to support the new technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, what you'll find in telcos is that they might have 30 or 40 different billing systems, because over the years they've added services. It's easier to just have a new billing system rather than try and upgrade the existing one. The IT department's too complicated, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So often consolidating multiple systems onto one platform, which our software is very suited to, is a reason for replacing platforms. I mean, it's simple mathematics. If you've got 10 billing systems and you can reduce that even to 5, you've saved 5 lots of maintenance contracts, 5 lots of internal teams, and so on and so on. Also, technology itself is a driver. So sometimes a new technology paradigm is just not supported by legacy billing systems. And actually what tends to happen is that new technology just of itself drives change in the supporting systems around the network. So if you're upgrading to 5G for mobile, for example, and you're going to spend the 100 million, well, you might as well change out the integrated billing system and charging system and CRM and workflow around that, because, you know, you might as well do that as one big thing rather than wait and let your other systems go out of date and so on. So often for no particular reason, no particular, you know, concrete need, telcos will upgrade their billing systems because of network technology change. Okay, so a little bit about customer base. Our customers are roughly, typically half our revenue comes from our European customers. And I think the only other point to make about this slide is that this is a very broad range of customers. So we have customers across every kind of telco you can imagine. We have big ones and small ones. Some names you recognize, Three probably, Airtel, Liberty Global, which is third largest cable operator in the world, and so on. But I think the important point here is that we can operate in niches in the tier one players. We don't necessarily do the whole thing. And in the mid-sized telcos, we tend to have more of the share of the footprint. So with our modular product strategy, we're able to play across the tiers, which is important in the kind of business that we're in. This picture really just illustrates how we managed to keep the growth curve relatively smooth. So as I was saying before, over 70% of our revenue will come from our existing customer base. So in a year where we don't have a particularly huge amount of revenue from new customers, so the black stuff at the top is revenue coming from customers won in the current year, we simply expand the amount of work we do for our existing customer base. And we have the ability to turn that tap on or off to an extent, because with 81 customers, you do have that sort of constant pent-up demand. So that's important to us. In fact, in the first half, so the numbers are out for our first half of this year, this number was 81%. A very quick look at the breakdown of revenue across licensed services, third party and so on. A question we often get asked, so these are the numbers. We had a particularly high software contribution in financial 17. That's the year to September 17, by the way, the last full year we reported. This, in our first half of 18, which we've just reported on, this was down to the normal sort of range of 30 to 40%. So it was about 34% in the first half. That's what we normally expect our software revenue level to be. And the fact that we have quite a large element of services is just, you know, direct result of doing these large transformation projects and doing a lot of work for existing customers. A little look at pipeline. I won't go into this in detail. The important point here is that these are relatively large numbers compared to our revenue, compared to the market expectation of our of our turnover for this year. So we can get some confidence from the fact that those numbers are in the of the right order, shall we say. Sales pipelines obviously aren't an exact science, as I'm sure you all know. But we do have a very structured process of qualifying leads and taking them through different stages and on a weekly basis, reanalyzing probability. So at any point in time, we know what the weighted pipeline is worth, so to speak. Okay, just a very quick look at order book and backlog. Very strong order growth going up to the end of 17. This is our backlog. So this is support and maintenance recurring revenue that automatically rolls over. And this is work contracted but not yet delivered. So that gave us a £13 million backlog at the start of 18. At the half year, that had gone up to 15 point something or other. So record back order at the end of our half year. And that gives us a certain amount of comfort in terms of being confident about delivering on the market forecasts that are out there. And then some recent wins. Proximus is like the BT of Belgium, so we're in the middle of implementing a new system for one of their MVNOs. MVNOs are kind of brands, if you like, a bit like Virgin Mobile in the UK, for example. Eni is one of the largest electricity companies in Denmark. They have a fibre network around their territory, and they're now selling wholesale space on that, capacity on that network to service providers, and they're using Cerulean for that, so that's quite interesting crossover with utilities. Shore are the rump of cable and wireless that wasn't sold to Liberty Global a couple of years ago. So they're the telco in the sort of full service telco in Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man. So that's quite interesting. And that's an example of consolidating lots of billing systems onto one platform. So that's four or five different systems all being brought together onto one Cerulean platform. Huge cost savings. And then this is interesting. I mean, it won't go to more, but ResMed, anyone heard of ResMed? It's the world leader in assisted breathing devices. So if you have something like sleep apnea, where you stop breathing when you're sleeping, or your breath, your breathing declines when you're sleeping, and you have to sleep with a breathing mask, they're the world leader in those. And they're selling this now as a subscription service. And they're using Cerulean cloud solution, cloud billing. This went live in a couple of weeks to sell that service. Right, so we've now got some numbers. Oliver, do you want to take us through this?
Yeah. This is the full year to September, so this is actually quite historical now. We have actually issued some half-year numbers since then to March 18, but it's effectively sort of on track and showing the same sort of upward projection. These really, in a nutshell, without going through the detailed P&L, balance sheet, etc., are our sort of key KPIs, which we monitor. New orders coming in the front door, so revenue to burn in the future, that was up, so that's encouraging. The back order, which Louis has already alluded to, 13.1 million, so just to reiterate the difference between sales and revenue, that is revenue we can take to the P&L account in the future. That's a key one for us to look at. So it sort of underpins the certainty of next year's revenue while we're investing on the cost side. That's the 13.1 million. We have published the number for the half year at March. So that was up again up to 15.4 million pounds as at March for future revenue over the next sort of 12 months or so. Total revenue moving on to the P&L account, 16 million. Up from 14.8. There's a breakdown between key components, software services and other. In terms of that, recurring revenue rising to 4.4 million, and we're looking for that to further rise going forwards with the Skyline product developing going forwards and managed service, which a number of our customers are moving over to. Healthy EBITDA at 3.6 million. The EBITDA margin, we're looking to achieve at least 20%. We've achieved that over the last few years, predominantly by developing India, which is our own subsidiary, and using those staff. Louis was mentioning they're doing support, R&D and development work. They're actually delivering end-to-end projects, customer-facing now as well. So that's very encouraging. We're up to 100 staff out there now. Down the bottom, the key ones are we do pay a dividend, which is important to investors. At year end, we've got net cash of 1.6 million. During the IPO process, we raised 10 million on the IPO and took a £5 million loan out from HSBC, so £15 million in total. The loan is being repaid over 5 years. We're two-fifths of the way through it, so down to about 3 million now. Cash in the bank was net, taking into account the loan as well, at 1.6 million at year end, and that's risen since. So we're cash generative and paying a dividend and getting rid of the loan, and we've got growth on top line revenue and we're profitable. Those are the key items.
Tim? Yes, margins on services and any plans to migrate the mix more from services to software?
Sorry, margin on the services?
On the services, yeah. What kind of gross margin do you make on services?
We don't disclose the gross margin on specific areas, but our gross margin overall is what?
70%.
Yeah.
Overall.
Gross margin on license is obviously higher because the software development costs are sunk costs and so on. But we're selling high-end services, so we're not selling bodies off the street. These are people who are experts in our software, so they're quite unique in that respect. And we achieve a pretty high charge-out rate for those people. We're certainly not selling people at offshore charge-out rates. And just sort of in summary, we're established, been here a long time, and we're looking for ways to accelerate the growth of the business, but it's a pretty solid platform. The visionary ranking in Gartner, hugely important to us last year, and again renewed this year. As an aside, we're also ranked first in a survey of 100 billing vendor customers based on customer satisfaction. So that was a big plus for us. We continue to see traction both in enterprise and software as a service with Skyline. And I think, as Oliver mentioned, we do have a progressive dividend policy. Our dividend was up 8% year on year at full year, and at the half year it was up by?
Another 7%.
So continuously increasing dividend, looking to pay out third to a half of free cash flow. And you know, looking forward, looks very positive. So any questions before we get thrown out? Yes, sir.
You talked about acquisitions. Can you just give a picture of what you're looking for?
Yeah. So what we're focused on with acquisitions is finding companies that do things around the edge of our footprint. So if you go back to the picture of our functional footprint, there we go. So we're not looking to find companies that do this stuff and just duplicate existing functionality. And I think the reason for that is that we've seen lots of businesses fail in the past trying to consolidate platforms, and it never really works. So we're looking for things we can fit around the edges that, you know, stretch this one out a little bit maybe. So data analytics is a good example. We'll stretch this one out a bit. Things that slot in around the sides or in between. Where we can use the same salespeople to market those products, and we can sell some of those new products to existing customers and vice versa. So that's very much what the strategy is based around.
What percentage of your revenue is coming from non-telco?
Non-telco. We have some enterprise customers in gas, power, water, but we don't disclose that. But it's relatively small. It's less than 5%. But it will become much bigger. Yeah, it's great. It's growing fast. Yeah. It will be much bigger in the future.
We're going to have to wrap it up there, but if we could all just put our hands together.
Thank you. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.